You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Emotional Oranges. They're a music collective based in California who are reminding us what R&B can be. Deliberately draped in mystery, the identities of the group's members are a well-kept secret, forcing fans to solely focus on the music. This talk is massively special because that mystery is very much respected on my end, and it was such a great surprise to have Emotional Oranges come in and share the stories behind how they started and this incredible music that they've made. The debut EP, The Juice Volume 1, is out now. Go check it out after this talk. It's fucking incredible. But yeah, this is the 405 Exchange with Emotional Oranges. Enjoy. So it's a pretty cool story about how this project came together. And what's especially cool about this episode that we're doing is that there'll be people listening who have no idea who you guys are. And I always love that because then people get to hear this and they get to hear the music and have the connection. So can you go into not only how you met, but also your previous experiences in music before doing Emotional Oranges? Like, what do you think it was that led you to making this project?
It's a very good question. I'll answer the first part, right? We met through actually my best friend growing up, and
you can't get into details.
Want me to?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was like the love of his life. They were together for a couple of years, and by proxy, you know, I really cared about her career, and I really liked her voice and her perspective, and it just made a lot of sense. You know, I mean, obviously it's like a very little context that I'm giving you, but being in his life as deep as I am, being in his life, naturally, like, I cared about how can I help grow, you know, his relationship and how, you know, honestly, how she ended up changing my life too, right? Like, these songs, a lot of them idea-wise were created years ago, but then she brings them to life. Whether it's the melodies she adds, whether it's the texture of her voice, whether it's, hey, we should maybe try to flip this and, you know, instead of writing a song about you and a girl, we should write about a song about how she left you for another girl, right? Like, taking that and flipping it on its head and offering ideas that I've never, you know, come across in an artist.
Well, I read the Noisy article that came out about you guys. And what's interesting is kind of like how you kept hitting home in that regard. But, you know, that ended up making me have so much questions when I had the context of the music and the little snippet of context of what you guys did outside of that. And, you know, obviously, to keep things a bit vague, because, you know, I just want to say, first and foremost, I love what you guys are doing in terms of not in terms of being mysterious, but some people interpret it as being mysterious, but I interpret it as making the music the focal point. And I love that. And I think that's really cool that in 2019 that could still happen. And,
cool.
Yeah, so I mean, I do want to ask you some things. I mean, going a little bit into like that, you know, the start of the project. I mean, I think it's always curious when people come together and they find themselves making art. I mean, you can answer this even in vague terms. Was it kind of obvious that you guys would be making music when you met?
No.
Or did that kind of surprise you?
I don't think so.
No, but when I met her, so here's the thing. I feel like in an artist's path or a writer, producer's path, there's two lives. One is when you decide, this is what I stand for, this is my vision, this is the DNA of what I want my shit to sound like. And two, the second life is like when you're kind of reborn, is when you find people collectively that believe in that vision, like that unified kind of goal of what you guys all want to reach. And she's the only person I know, and I'll say this to anyone's face, that works harder than me. And I work really, really hard. So to see someone that wanted it as bad, if not more, than I did, this shit felt like Voltron. Just to make like a 90s reference.
I love that.
Right? It just came together like, I don't know. Everything else has always been like water and oil. Like everything that I've done in my life before this is like I wanted it. I just kept trying to get shit to fit. And you could talk about that because I feel like you have such an amazing perspective like coming from New York. And I mean, you can talk about that.
Well, you know, I grew up here in the city doing theater and working at TGI Fridays as a dishwasher.
Respect.
And moving up in like even that job, you know, and then realizing that New York is amazing, but I wanted more for myself, so I just moved to LA and tried to pursue, you know, a solo career. And I felt like we just understood each other instantly, you know, just as friends, as people, as energies, as spirits. It was just like, it just made sense. Yeah. And Emotional Oranges kind of just happened. We didn't go in like, we're going to do this. He already had that idea in his head of the Emotional Oranges, you know, creation. But I just felt like it just happened. It blended really well.
So you know what's really dope is you recently released your first project, The Juice Volume 1. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
There's a lot I want to ask you about that. But first, tell me about the experience of bringing this body of work to life. I mean, what I loved about what you described just now about that element of being from New York and going to LA, and I feel it's so relevant, is that being in a place like New York, it's all about hustle. It's all about working, grinding yourself.
Which I learned at a very young age. Like, I was taking myself to auditions and signing in for my mom because she was at work.
Yeah.
Like, I was literally hustling constantly, selling fucking... Oh, yeah, girls.
Yeah, you can.
Selling, like, candy on the fucking subway, just the schools, or, like, selling sodas on the corner. Like, I've always had that mentality. Yeah. But I felt like New York was kind of, like, holding me back. No pun intended. I just felt like it just wasn't giving me what I needed. And sometimes you just have to pick up and run.
Yeah.
To, like, find it, you know? So I did. And I literally stayed on the couch for, like, 3 months in L.A. and just, like, grinded my ass off. And then I met Ray, who is like an amazing guy.
He's a guardian angel.
He really is. Like, he's amazing. And he and him were best friends. And he was just like, yo, I really want you to meet A and just like vibe with him, talk to him about like the music industry. He knows the ins and outs. And we went in, we had a meeting, and it just spiraled.
Yeah. And I think what's really cool about being a New Yorker going to LA, from what's been inferred to me from friends of mine from here that have gone, is that you recognize that you can work hard but also feel relaxed generally just from your environment. I bring both of that up, the contrast of that, because I feel like that's what comes across in this project. Like, there's emotional stuff going on, no pun intended as well, but it's a relaxed listen. Like, you can vibe to it. You can really like just put in the background or also be in a car or also be on a train, and you can feel it, but you don't feel overwhelmed by it. So,
yeah.
Like, kudos to you guys, because
that's awesome. That's probably one of the best compliments I've ever got. Yeah.
Are you guys happy with how the final product of this matched up to the execution? Because, I mean, so many people ask about how a project was made, and I like to always point out to people listening that, like, you know, there's a lot more tedium that comes with making music than people would expect.
Right.
But it must be really cool to see that you could work so hard on something and see it turn out the way that it has.
It's amazing. I think work ethic is one thing, but learning as you get older, like learning to work really smart and efficiently and to not waste your energies on people or ideas that you can't look in the mirror and go, that's me as a human.
Mm.
Right? Not like, what's going to get me on? I think as you start, like, at least for me, when I was like in my late teens or early 20s, it was like, I just wanted to get on. Like, you grow up and you're like, oh man, I'm, you know, Nas, Pac, whatever. And you're looking at, but now it's like the platform is right in front of you. The internet's at your fingertips. Your favorite art directors, your favorite graphic designers, your favorite musicians. Like, if you really care and you take the time, there isn't an idea that can be executed. And this is just the beginning. So here you say that at this level, it's really exciting because I think you're going to be even more surprised when you see what happens in the fall. You know, this is volume one. It's called volume one for a reason. It's a lot of beginnings for us. You know, it's like closing chapters and a lot of things and a lot of new beginnings. But I think as you see the project formulate and roll out, is to me, roll out and creative is equally as important as the music. If not in 2019, more important. Why should people care? You know, it's cool that you guys sound good and you write good songs, but what's gonna make Shy be able to go out and get me an interview like this, or be able to get one of our friends' face on a billboard,
yeah.
Or be able to get, you know, Roy from the Joe Budden podcast to play this shit over and over and over again, or to get Evan from Vanoss Gaming to put it in every outro video, or to get Jovan, who runs, like, in my opinion, like, the coolest culture in LA, to get him to keep talking about the shit. What separates you? What's and why? Like, why should anybody give a fuck? And having her and having Mitch and having, you know, all these, and Will and all these pieces, people that are really the best at what they do, makes it so easy for me. I'm just a conductor. I sit in the back and you'll see it tonight. Like, I don't have to do shit. I could stand there and she's going to be the best performer in New York today and next year, you know, all the way through.
I just put my leg up.
For people listening. And man, I mean, important to note that we're at Music Hall Williamsburg. You're about to be playing your first sold out show here. Right before I came in with Shy, we saw some like kids like queued up around the corner. Yeah. And to me, that echoes so much about what you're doing, because it does. It speaks to that connectivity with like the internet and what you're able to do now. Because, I mean, and it goes again to, it's all tangential, but it goes again to like what you're doing with keeping it so focused on the music. Because how beautiful is it in 2019, there's kids who can be queued outside of a venue, sorry, lined up fully for Americans, and it's only about music. They're not there because you guys have however follower count on Instagram or whatever. They're not there because your faces are everywhere. It's like, oh, I love this song, I want to see it.
Crazy. It's crazy too, because honestly, we work very hard on this project, and like, we've been in 10-hour rehearsals getting ready for this tour, and we are like, we got migraines, we're starving, but we're still on stage just like sweating it out. And then when we hit like Toronto yesterday and they knew every word,
sick,
bro, I almost passed out. That's like amazing. I literally was like, I looked at him, I was like, what the fuck is happening in my life?
You're going to this world though, bro. Like, it was just like us.
Yeah,
it was just like us and the fans were this, like, there was this
amoeba.
Yeah. Wow, what a good word.
That was a good word.
That's a fucking amazing
word. I was going to say black hole, but I like amoeba more.
We were like together. The
glass half full.
Yeah. Just, that shit, I like literally almost passed out, because not that you forget, but you put so much hard work into something and then it just happens and you're like in the middle of it.
Yeah.
It was wild.
It was the best moment of my life.
That's so cool. Well, you brought up Rory from the Joe Budden podcast. And
my dog.
I'm glad you did, because he's actually the reason I know of you guys. From an episode where he played Hold You Back as a Sleeper. And that was one of those moments where, like, I love when I can recall a moment where I hear a song and it's like the world literally stopped, where it's like nothing else is going on in my brain.
Oh,
I'm like,
so cool.
What the fuck is going on with this song? So, I mean, it's a great blend of smooth instrumentation and drums that hit you the right way, and the vocals are so fucking crisp. I'd love to hear the story about this one, or as much of a story as you could give about how this amazing song came to be.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of touched on it a little earlier, but
in the living room.
We were sitting in our living room, and I had the track ready, and I had like an idea of a hook concept, and she heard it, and she was like, "Yeah, we could do better." And then she came up with the idea to flip it and make it, instead of me writing about my girlfriend and my relationship with her, my ex-girlfriend really at the time, to write about, let's write about somebody else. And this someone else is like a lot of people, especially in the States. You know, this someone else is like, I know I have a couple of friends that are pretty close to me. They're girls. Like, it's not that they're not fucking with dudes or him anymore. It's just like, they needed something different. These dudes kept tripping over the same shit. They're like, I need to try someone else. You know, you're holding me back. Let me go. Like, that, she understands me way better than you do, clearly. You know, and V was able to just shed light on a whole new perspective, because she lives in that culture, in that space. Yeah.
Okay. I just winked.
You know what's so funny? Usually I'm the one that has to point out what someone's doing visibly, audibly. I love that you're doing it. I should bring you around for more.
I love drama.
Fantastic. I want to next ask about Unless You're Drowning. That's another standout tune, and it also has quite the weird visual. And I bring that up because going into like what the time that we're in now in terms of like grabbing people's attention and retaining it, you know, if you sit in any ad firm or marketing firm, it's always the conversation of like, how can we keep people engaged, how can we keep people's eyes fixated on something. You made something with this visual where I would arguably say most people would probably instinctively want to like look away, but it is still beautiful. And it was really interesting. Like, my main thing is not necessarily how it was made, but I wonder how it felt for you as the creators of the song to see your song work so well alongside a visual like that. That
you talk about the song?
We wrote it in like 15 minutes.
That's one of those.
Literally, crazy. It was our first session together. It was in Will's bedroom. And I came downstairs. I think I had like a bagel in my hand. And A was laying on the bed and he was like, yo, I have this idea. He played the track. He had already had the track done. And
crazy.
15 minutes later, we had the hook, melodies. It just came. And then obviously our creative team is wild as fuck.
Yeah.
And they got it instantly. I feel like there was no pushback with that song. The creative just kind of rolled out.
That was the first video we ever did.
Yeah. That was actually the first everything. Minus Motion. I think Motion was already out.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't out. It was close to being out.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Yeah, one thing people don't even realize, and I think tonight you'll see it, is Motion was before, like, remember I talked about Rebirth?
Yeah.
And the beginning of a new life? Unless You're Drowning was the beginning of our life as Emotional Oranges. Motion was not in that bunch. It was done 2-3 years before we did Unless You're Drowning.
Jesus.
Yeah.
But you know what, that has to feel so, I mean, obviously enthralling, but that has to feel so affirming to your creativity that it could happen that quickly. I mean, obviously it doesn't happen all the time, but the fact that the song and the visual of Unless You're Drowning came together that way, I mean,
yeah.
Did that feel great?
Ray, a few people on the squad were saying that should go second.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, I'm telling you personal, bro.
Oh, yeah, we had like disputes about this record. We were like, no, it's Unless You're Drowning.
But
like,
but
no,
it came at a great time. They both came at the right time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, with no personal, there's no gateway. You
know,
and that opened up the world to be able to do Unless You're Drowning. But yeah, that was like 13 minutes, bro. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And then the production took literally 9 months. Like, we Frankensteined it. Like,
yeah.
It was jam banding in the beginning. We wanted to put MPC style drums on it, so it still knocked like an Emotional Oranges song.
Well, every song has been like baked to perfection. You know what I mean? Like, the ingredients, everything, we did it quickly, but then the process of the baking definitely took, like, every song was crafted, I think. It wasn't rushed. But our writing is just like electric. It happens instantly.
Yes,
all of our songs are like that. We've never had a session longer than an hour.
That's
for writing, yeah, 100%.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Production shit takes ages, but unfortunately.
I'm glad that I'm glad you brought up personal, because I hear a song like Personal and I hear a group that so strongly doesn't want to be pigeonholed. That's what I get from listening to that song. And tell me, when it comes to being in the studio, what are the conversations like in terms of influences? Because something I think is really cool about Emotional Oranges as a whole is that you don't shy away from being obvious about your influences, but it's so clear that it's not like a collar. It's just so much like, hey, these are like, I think you, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's more like you look at it as like different colored paints on a palette that you may be able to utilize, but
absolutely,
it doesn't build the whole thing.
Yeah, I gotta say, it's like shocking to me that more people don't know the quote, like, you know, great people really steal, bro. like we listen to these records and we're like, yo, Sade, that guitar, No Ordinary Love, like, why has that not been flipped in modern pop music? That's just 20 years old. It's aged like fine wine.
Yeah.
And you hear Hold You Back, and I don't know if people are catching it, but that's the same vibe. You hear Brandy, The Boy Is Mine, those exact drums, that exact pattern. You guys can't sue us because we put, you know, an extra kick in there, but, you know, in different sounds,
we'll
obviously, but same pattern. You know, it's, and yeah, we put it out there because it's like, you, the 16-year-old us needs to know. Like, this shit exists. Like, and you can't really go digging anymore. You know, if you're 16, like, in your mind, it's like, oh shit, like, that's, no, go back and look, bro. Emotional Oranges isn't, we're an amalgamation of all these fire-ass people. You know, and each song is so different. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah.
Like, people barely get to hear her rap on this project, but that's something we really want to explore in the future. Like, she crushes Built That Way, you know, it was out of the park. And that's some shit, like, for me, I grew up on Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, so I need to hear that. I need to hear women being, like, multi-syllable rhymes and in the pocket, but also adding melody, and, like, no one can do it like she can. We just started flexing that muscle.
I love that.
Yeah.
And tell me, like, when you're in the studio and you're doing that, I mean, does it surprise you in the sense that, like, when you're doing that, it's just so clear that anything could happen creatively? I mean, obviously you're creatives and, like, that's what you're always aiming for, but when you actually achieve that, like, what does that feel like?
Pancakes?
Chocolate chip pancakes.
Yeah,
with syrup. Oh, God. Diner chocolate chip pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
At 2 a.m,
oh,
after you drank your ass off.
It feels so good, bro.
Perfect. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I just had a moment. I just feel so bad for anyone who hasn't experienced 2 a.m. chocolate chip pancakes in a diner. It's just, that is the best.
Go out now to your local diner.
That was the best answer.
It's insane, bro.
Yeah.
It's insane. And like I said, I really feel this is the tip of the iceberg. Like I say that with like, you know, full humility, but it's more excitement than anything.
Yeah.
You know, being able to work with people that are the best at what they do, it's frightening almost. Like, yo, you know, every time you get in like the studio with them, it's the unexpected can happen.
No, facts. I only have a couple more questions for you guys, but you know, thanks so much for taking the time. I mean, you'll literally be on stage in about like an hour, 15 minutes. Sheesh. And that's so fucking dope. So yeah, seriously, yeah, thanks for taking the time.
Of course. I gotta go stretch my splits.
you know, I mentioned I'll Hold You Back was the first song of yours I heard, and that was due to appearing on the Joe Budden podcast when Rory played it. This is a bit more of a question for me because I'm a bit of a fanboy, musically and of course the podcast, but what's it like having someone like Rory on your side? And can you talk a bit about that relationship? Because that's really sick.
First off, we're like the same age as Rory, so we all grew up on the same shit. So the best way I could put this is the relationship was so organic. Like, I didn't wake up and ask, yo, can you put a song like this or can you put a song like this? He's like, what are you guys working on? Yo, can I put this in the podcast? Of course you can. Why not? Yo, you guys are playing in Toronto? That's the first show? Cool. Can I pull up? Yeah, absolutely. Yo, you guys want to come out and do this little after party tonight for the show? Just like with the homies? Let's go. And that building organically into like, we really want to partner with Rory. You know, and like on a very real level. Nowadays, I mean, managers are so... It's not even... I can't even... categorize it as management because it's like you're in a fucking life partnership with this person. They pick up your call at 3 a.m. when shit's going terrible, and then the one celebrating with you at the Grammys 3-4 years later and everything in between. And it's been so organic to see him come into this role of like, I'm gonna make sure you guys are the biggest shit in the world in the next 5 years, and I'm gonna make that like a life mission, right? So you could take whatever you want from that, but it's the same way I felt about when I met her. You know, when she started doing the EO shit, it felt like we're getting there. There's nothing stopping us. Another one of those moments is Rory.
That's amazing.
You know, so yeah, I mean, he, dude, thank you, Rory, for real.
Yeah, big ups, Rory, for listening. Cheers, man.
He's listening.
Yeah, he's always listening. He's omnipresent, bro. Yeah. Rory's everywhere.
I really want to, before you like leave off, I kind of want to, I mean, it's the obvious thing to ask. I'm sure it's the thing everyone's going to ask you first. So I kind of left it off last. But I do kind of want to touch on it because I feel like the way you'll be able to go into it, especially on a platform like this, it'll definitely, you know, it'll give more context to a lot of people. So for people who are listening who might not be familiar, it's a project where people can't find your faces online. If people dug deep enough on like social media, maybe they could, but clearly your faces being out there is the most important thing. Now, it's been pointed out that the only account that you guys follow on Twitter is Sade, which is fucking amazing. And I feel in a lot of ways that's a statement in itself. I mean, obviously 2019, you have to point out obvious things, but just walk me through.
Wow. I got chills because you put a lot of pieces together that no one's put together yet.
Really?
Yes. Because not many people were around for the Sade rollout. So for you to say, yeah, not very many people know. It took a long time. Still people don't know. Sade's a band.
Yeah.
It's not one person. So I see on Twitter all the time, oh, EO on some weekend shit. Yo, y'all gotta go back. Go do your digging.
And he even, like Abel from the weekend, he openly references Sade all the time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's even funny, even with that, people still don't know.
It's crazy.
The question I was gonna ask is that, I'm sure everyone's gonna ask you the why, they're gonna ask you the decision, they're like, what was that conversation like? And I'm not interested in that, because that's just so typical and so, you know, easy to ask. I more wanna know, like, how have you been finding it after the fact? Like, do you feel, not necessarily comfortable, but do you feel like validated with making that choice? Because, I mean, we talked about earlier where there's kids queued up like around the corner, they don't know your face and they're here for the music. I mean, is that everything you need to know right there?
I think so. I think just like the weekend, nobody really knew he was kind of about the music at first too. And then it evolves, everything evolves eventually. And I think when that moment comes, we'll evolve with the conversation. But I think right now it's about the music and the feeling and the experience. We want to give everybody what they want.
That's nuts. Yeah, this is like the most exciting time. I feel like the golden era of music is having the second go around. It's really exciting.
Yeah. Tell me this. So I'm about to see you guys live. Mm-hmm. I'm really stoked for it. How would you describe what I'm about to see you really quick?
The elevator pitch. I think there's no elevator pitch. I should really think of an elevator pitch. I think that you're going to see two of really the best in their lane in terms of Mitch, who plays guitar for us, and V, in terms of like performers and entertainers. And I think you're going to see music that hopefully moves you more alive than it did on the record, which is, or at least it's been difficult for us to experience, you know, at shows.
Yeah.
Sometimes people change their songs, change the keys of their songs, add new sounds that were never there before, like thinking it's going to elevate things. Don't expect much of that with us. Just expect like, yeah, we're trying to, I'm setting the bar kind of high. just come check the show.
Yeah, live in the moment with us.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, guys, thanks so much for the chat. And, you know, I just want to say again, because I said a little bit before, but I just want to say it again, that, you know, obviously, you know, things with like marketing and people choosing different ways to market themselves, it's so easy to kind of look at something mysterious and scoff at it. But I think what you're doing is really cool. And I also think it's cool that you can listen to the music and that can be the focus of everything. And that obviously you choosing to do what you're doing is your own choice. But the fact that it's affirmed within the music, it says everything. So
thank you for that.
Thank
seriously,
you so much.
Genuinely.
Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Shout out to the 405 one time.